2 weeks left of torpor. So if you haven't been feeling urgency, now is probably a good time to start. And then, because we want to be able to finish out the torque portion strong, but also not looking at it like there's 2 weeks left, so I better start getting stuff together. Because after the 2 weeks, it's not like pressure's gonna come off, because it still is beginning to something.
Thanks, Sean. Okay. Well, I feel like something happened the last couple of weeks that has brought us to a place tonight that's specific to where we are as a community. Obviously, that's what's all happening. There's the personal side, and then there's the corporate side, or there's the individual relationship, and then there's the relationship that we carry as a family and as a house. And the words that we've been coming under have been the fullness of the gospel, and the week prior to last week was the fullness of the gospel as it is for us in a personal way. And what I felt happened last Friday is Yahweh addressed it on a corporate level. So it was the gospel on behalf of the bride or the community. And so moving from last week, one of the things that was heavy all week long was if I'm going to be in response to that expression of salvation or the gift of salvation, which I'm understanding at a deeper level than I ever have before, and therefore understanding my personal purpose more than I ever have before, am I going to respond in wisdom or in foolishness? And am I going to live my life in wisdom or in foolishness, knowing that either way that I'm operating is in response to? Because when he makes something known, or he makes something known to me, then it's my turn. So what was released over us last week is now that it's our turn. Obviously, it's always been our turn. We're just learning that. So it feels like we're having to re-acknowledge fundamental truths. Like, he already kept his promise. It's your turn. He provided, you received a benefit, now you get to respond. All of those truths are things we've known, but we haven't necessarily lived by. And so those are being reconciled. And one of the ways that it was reconciled last week had to do with foolishness and wisdom. So every decision that I felt was being presented to me, even in the way that I handle myself, the way that I conduct myself, what I'm going to do with my time, came down to being either a fool or someone who is going to come under wisdom. Because in and of myself, I don't carry wisdom. I'm a fool. But in the gift of who and how he is, I can come under wisdom by simply evaluating, am I on the right trajectory? And is what I'm doing, or the decision that I'm making in this moment, the commitment I'm making in my time, my energy, my focus, whatever it is that aiding or partnering with that trajectory? So even like with what Sean's speaking to about our the intentionality in our time. I can already see him just looking at Jaylen. He's all trying not to smile. but with coming into the time frame that Yahweh's given us, and or the timeline and all of those things that have been spoken to in that intentionality, we have the equipping or that guidepost as a community of foolishness, wisdom, and what it means for us to operate in that, in response to that personal expression of salvation and the gospel that we hadn't understood before. So it feels new, meaning we feel new in that because it's clear how to gauge where we are and what we're going to operate in.
Thank you for that. I appreciate you summarizing and kind of posturing the family every week, because I feel like there's been so much that it's hard to capture in a brief summary like that to prepare the family of everything that he's been doing. And I think it's important what Sean was talking about, urgency. Like, hopefully nobody is looking at the time we have now like, okay, now I'm going to prepare myself for what's coming at Tabernacles. And I think what you said is a key. If we don't deceive ourselves to think that the decisions we have are about comfort or discomfort, but recognizing that every decision, now that we have the understanding that we do, is a matter of wisdom or foolishness, and there's really no in between. It just kind of helps you to realize the reality of things. And I think, to be honest, come Sukkot and the transition that we're stepping into, it's not a matter of even thinking of it as like being prepared or not, but more, I would think of it now of more, it's going to just reveal where you've been at. Like, it'll be a self-revelation of where we've all been. And so that can be overwhelming, but I think we have to make the decision of wisdom or foolishness of where we're at. So even if we haven't done the work, then we got to make that decision. Kind of to take a step way back and look at everything from a higher perspective, just to orient ourselves, is we're going through a huge process of restoration. And I want to kind of encapsulate that process of restoration in a way that we can understand where we're at in the process. So essentially, there's kind of three categories. There's revelation, which involves us processing things intellectually. So us understanding something new and then receiving knowledge from that new understanding. That's like the initial form of restoration, because you become aware of something that you weren't, right? So now you have knowledge that you didn't have before. I think we're beyond that. Hopefully we're beyond that operation of just receiving knowledge so that we can increase our intellect and take it no further than that. But then beyond that, you apply that knowledge, which is discipline. Hopefully that's the place that we've been operating in up until this transition that we're going to go through in a few weeks. Right, we've been applying that knowledge that we're receiving on a continual basis, which is forming a degree of discipline that we're applying that knowledge on a consistent basis. Right, so this is a way for us to examine like where we're at. If we haven't been applying these things on a consistent basis, then we're not operating in discipline, and we're just increasing in knowledge, but not doing anything with it. We're stepping out of, not out of that, but we're stepping beyond that or building on that by stepping into your daily walk, which is culture. That's what we're stepping into. We've talked about we're going to understand the culture, and that's what we're transitioning to on this threshold of Tabernacles. And so that's going to be important as we go through the Torah portion tonight, to remember that. Because we have to be able to orient ourselves and where we're at. Okay, so like I said, we're not stepping out of revelation or discipline. We're just building on those things, and now we're adding culture to it. Okay, so that's where we should be at as a family. Ideally, that's where we should be at. Just kind of a review of last week. We talked about the coming apostasy and them forgetting their foundation and their origin. I think this week is kind of an answer to last week. It's kind of the flip side of the coin from last week for us to understand how things go well for us versus last week was everything just was terrible, right? We were probably leaving last week feeling somewhat like, man, if I don't understand this, like, it's not going to be good for me. But Yahweh's grace comes through in this Torah portion. But we have to, I want to just review last week the Song of Moshe and its function, and all the functions that that song served was to basically witness against us and confront us when we rewrite history, because we have the self-deception that we're sufficient, or we did these things on our own. Right? So that elevated heart position is fooled by abundance, thinking that it's self-sufficiency. And then learning that he would hide his face, which was basically him stepping away to allow you to lean on those false things that you think are rocks and reveal the inadequacy of those things that we depend on, right? Because we're not really independent. We're just depending on something false.
Yeah.
And so he would hide his face to reveal that inadequacy, right? So we have to understand last week. We have to understand that it's precept upon precept. Every week he is teaching us something to incorporate into our discipline, into our application, so that it can become a daily thing, and it's becoming a collective culture in the family. A collective culture in each and every household. And if we're not doing that, then, you know, 3 weeks out or 2 weeks out or whatever the case may be, it's going to be harder to appropriate those things into your culture as a household and shift your culture to look more like what he wants the culture to be, what he designed it to be. Right? So we have to understand what goes wrong, so that we can then understand tonight, the Torah portion, how to step into things and recover from that. Okay. So tonight, last week was the Song of Moshe. Now it's the blessings of Moshe. Okay. So we have the mechanism release that's going to confront you when you're giving a false narrative. And then this week, he's coming with the blessings, which just counteracts the dynamic from last week. Okay, so this is going to be highly encouraging. It's going to solidify some things about who we are, how we operate, how we view things, and understanding something as simple as blessing that we thought we understood that I believe we didn't understand. So we're going to get into that, and this whole Torah portion starts with Yahweh manifesting himself. Okay, the first couple verses, he manifests himself, and I believe it gives us an understanding or another layer of what Torah is with his manifestation of himself. And what we can learn from that is that Torah isn't first like a set of rules and regulations. Okay, we know it as that, but in Yahweh just showing up and manifesting himself, Torah was dispensed. Okay, so it was more of a revelation of who he is, yeah, first and foremost, before, yeah, it becomes rules and regulations as we, yeah, understand it. Okay, so when he shows up with his character, like we talked about before, he literally just manifests justice. Mm-hmm. He manifests integrity, how you should live your life, your daily walk, how you treat other people, what love is, all those things that literally just comes out of him when he shows up on the scene. But what's interesting about this revelation is it describes the Torah in his right hand as a fiery, like a weapon. Yeah. And he throws it down to earth like lightning. So it's just kind of crazy to think about. You know, I always love these kind of depictions of who Yahweh is, because it flies in the face of this form of dull, diluted Christianity that you just, you know, you got to be a doormat. You have to be nice to everybody. You can't make waves, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And when Yahweh, on the heels of what he said would happen in our apostasy, he shows up with the Torah as a fiery weapon in his hand, and he throws it down to earth in order to establish the restoration process that I talked about.
Yeah.
He brings revelation of himself, which gives us understanding or knowledge. And he's starting this process over again when he shows up with the Torah in his hands.
Yeah.
Okay? So he's starting this whole process over again. But it's a revelation of his character, and it's the origin of the restoration process. I want us to understand that. And that process, going back, is apostasy from the last chapter, revelation, him manifesting himself, which leads to inheritance, identity, distinction, function, and then overall restoration as a fulfillment of restoration all the way through culture being established. Okay? So what we just have to assess, like, what is our view of Torah? That's a good question for us to ask ourselves at this point in time as we're getting ready to complete the three-year cycle. How is it that we view Torah, and is it something we view as a prized possession that Yahweh has given us, something that initiates a full restoration process all the way through the culture that you live in your household and the way that you walk, solidified to the extent that it's intergenerational and it's safeguarded over generations? Okay, if we just look at it like, oh man, it's all these rules we have to follow, which I hope we're beyond that point, then we're kind of missing, we're missing the thing that it's doing and initiating in our life. Mm-hmm. We're missing his character, ultimately, his revelation of himself, if we're not looking at it properly. So this, once you get beyond the first couple verses, in verse 3, it makes me think of the way that Sean has been hosting and positioning us, because in verse 3, it basically resets the proper posture that the people should have that they didn't have in chapter 32, where they were running amok and acting foolish and doing all this crazy stuff, right? Verse 3 literally resets the proper posture from Jeshurun being somebody who got fat and began rebelling against Yahweh because of their own illusion of self-sufficiency, right? It resets that prosper from rebellion to being secure in his hands. Remember last week we talked a lot about insecurity and how prevalent it is,
yeah,
and how that will drive people to try to obtain whatever it is that will satisfy them,
yeah,
temporarily,
yeah,
right? Part of this family DNA that we are in, part of our family DNA is a sense of security and knowing who you are because of who has secured you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We don't want to raise, it is not part of our DNA to be insecure people lacking,
yeah,
confidence,
yeah,
in who we are because we don't know where we came from because we're rewriting history, right? That's all review of chapter 32. So he resets as a father with just showing up. He resets what the proper posture should be, and it's we're secure in his hand and we're seated at his feet. What Sean's been doing to host and to posture us as we conclude our three-year cycle is to be seated at the feet, right?
Yes.
Not of mom and I, but as a reflection of our posture and how we're setting ourselves up to step into what it is that he's asking us to step into. And it's in order to receive his words.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in his hands, we're seated at his feet, and we're ready to listen and obey what it is that he's releasing. So this is, he manifests himself, he brings Torah to bear in the situation, literally as a weapon. And the reason why I say as a weapon is because if you pay attention to those verses, there's a host of angelic soldiers that are accompanying him when he dispenses the Torah to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's scriptures in the New Testament talking about the Torah being ordained by angels, being accompanied by angels as it's dispensed. So that's why I'm talking about this image of him showing up with a weapon, manifesting himself in order to reset the craziness from the last chapter. Right? And even though he said, this is what's going to happen to you, he still shows up,
yeah,
and gives the opportunity for us to reset.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have to have the proper posture, which Moshe is talking about in verse 3. So, we're secure, we're submitted, and we're obedient to his instructions. That's the proper posture that resets,
mm-hmm,
the apostasy from,
yeah,
the last chapter.
Yeah.
So 32, we're fat, we're kicking against. This chapter, we're secure, we're seated at the feet, and we're ready to receive and obey. Completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You move on to verse 4. This is interesting. Moshe commands Torah as an inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. So going back to how do we think of Torah, and think of it in terms of the last thing that Moshe dispenses. You know, I know we talked about that last chapter, but it's kind of This is all encompassing his last interaction as a living man fulfilling his assignment. And so this is important, that one of the last things he reiterates is that Torah is an inheritance. It's an inheritance of the congregation, which means it's an intergenerational possession. Torah is actually a thing to be celebrated. It's a thing to be safeguarded generation to generation, making sure that you are living it, making sure that it's a cultural possession that you are living out so that you can pass it on. You cannot pass it on if you're not experiencing restoration to the level of culture. You cannot pass that on because you're not living it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, that's good.
You can understand it. You can get a revelation of it. You can begin to apply that knowledge. But if it's not reaching the level of fullness in terms of a culture, a collective culture that's being lived out in your household and in the community, you cannot hand that down generationally,
yeah, that's
right? And so that's why Moshe is speaking these things on the very at the very end of his life as they're getting ready to step over. Okay, we got to understand, like, we have to put it in the context of where Moshe's at in fulfilling. This is him fulfilling his assignment. This is the fulfillment of his assignment before he is laid to rest. Psalm 119, 111 says, "Your decrees," which is the Torah, "is eternal, and I've inherited forever, is the joy of my heart." Like, that's how we have to view Torah. It's an eternal decree, and it's the joy of our heart. Like, that should be how we view Torah in our households, so that it becomes something that we eventually walk out. Now, I think this is more of a teaching tonight for us to just really let it settle and let us understand what it is that's transpiring and how important it is, how blessing is articulated and how blessing is conveyed, so that we understand not only what we're not supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Okay, don't be insecure. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, how do we do that?
Yeah.
And I think this understanding of blessing is going to add to not only what not to do, but then allow us to gain that revelation and that applied knowledge to be disciplined in understanding what blessing is, so we can actually receive blessing and let it serve its purpose for the greater restoration. Okay, so we gotta define blessing so that we can understand it. If the last chapter, we have the way that we have to filter it is, we going back to wisdom, establishing memory and insight, this is going to be the context for us to understand what blessing is. And blessing, I think, probably the way most of us have thought about it for most of our lives is that if you say I'm blessed, or somebody says I want to bless you, normally it's going to be because you received something good. You received something nice. You treat it as something good taking place in your life, right? It's something good. It's comforting. It's the temporal understanding of this is good. I'm blessed, right? We have to understand through what we learned last week that you can be suffering and be blessed.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. We have to understand that we don't. Our security is not found in the comfort of the present situation.
Yes.
We should be a people, if we're going to live for him, we have to understand that we can be fully blessed and fully suffering at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay? But in addition to that, it's not, right? Are we all good on that? I'm not saying it's not a blessing if you receive something nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. That's a blessing. But we have to understand the depth of what is transpiring here because of what it carries into intergenerational safeguarding of the Torah. In Moshe's mind, he's thinking, I need to bless them so that this Torah transcends them and reaches their next generation and so on and so forth. That's what he's thinking when he's as he's fulfilling his assignment, because part of his assignment is I need to make sure Torah is fully established in this next generation.
Yeah.
Right? That's how he's thinking of it. So he's not just giving them nice things. Mm-hmm. Right? He's not making sure they're comfortable. Yeah. That almost has nothing to do with the blessings of Moshe. Right? So we understand that. This is how I would define blessings in this Torah portion for us to understand and for us to apply the knowledge in our life, be disciplined by this understanding, and then apply it in our households. Like our children should understand blessing in such a way that they don't trip up or are thrown when they don't have a nice feeling situation in their life.
Yeah.
Okay? It's an expansion and a fulfillment of your covenantal DNA. That's what a blessing is. He's literally, by blessing them, he is speaking in a way that is expanding. We're going through expansion right now. But literally, when he blesses them, he is expanding and bringing to fulfillment what is already in their DNA.
Yeah.
So as a father, as a patriarch, as one who is fulfilling his assignment at the end of his life, he is making sure that he takes his last breath to speak words over them that brings their DNA into expansion, into fulfillment, so they can serve the purpose that they were designed to serve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Think about Yeshua. Think about Yeshua. His last breath was essentially him acknowledging that he had fulfilled his assignment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is how important. And in that moment, he was blessed.
Yeah.
In that moment, according to this definition, Yeshua was blessed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right? So we have to understand that what a blessing is, that it's doing something. When a spiritual father blesses you, he's not necessarily giving you something nice or comforting you. Hey, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Right? When a father is fulfilling his assignment and understands his role as a father, he's going to bless you in a way that expands and fulfills and activates and empowers what he knows is in your covenantal DNA that you didn't even know.
Yeah.
So then we have to figure out what's covenantal DNA then. Okay? We have, in this house, we have covenantal DNA. And this is what you see Moshe addressing with the 11 tribes. He didn't give one blanket blessing to each tribe.
Yeah.
He didn't give the same blessing to each tribe because within their covenantal DNA, well, let me back up. There's two things happening here. There's Torah being manifested. And then there's blessings. The Torah is providing a collective framework that nobody is excluded from. And this is important for us to understand, to affirm what it was we said not to do last week. What the Torah portion told us not to engage in last week, this is going to be important for us to know. Because part of insecurity is this feeling or this lie that there isn't enough for everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Or if somebody's blessed and we're looking at it in the wrong way, then I want that blessing. I want to be engaged in that way. And you're playing on the totally wrong battlefield. When you're looking at blessing wrong, you're looking at other people, you begin to compare. You think you're the source. You could see how that messes you up if you feel self-sufficient, but yet somebody else is getting blessed and you're not. It just turns into a huge mess. So he dispenses Torah, which is the collective belonging that each of these distinct tribes belongs to, regardless of their separate identities. Okay, nobody's excluded from being a part of what the Torah provides, regardless of their blessing, regardless of who they are. It doesn't matter who you are or who you're not. You are all a part of this collective identity that the Torah provides. But the blessings are unique and distinct, and they're based on covenantal DNA, and there's several factors, which means each and every one of us individually has different a different combination of these things, which means you have a different blessing. No blessing is the same.
Yeah.
Even though we are all part of the same collective belonging and membership, no blessing is essentially the same. Nobody can duplicate your blessing. And if you're looking for somebody else's blessing, you're just failing to acknowledge your blessing, which is why Moshe as a father was speaking to them in a way to make them aware of what's already in their DNA and activating it.
Yeah.
So this is what your covenantal DNA is made up of: your name, your history. I feel like this is so empowering for family identity, both as individual households and as a tribe of kingdom heirs. As those tribes, this had to be hugely empowering for their tribal identity or their family identity, so to speak. But it's your name, your history, or your ancestry, your character, your calling, which we know is a result of a condition. So everybody's called to address a different condition. The territory that you occupy, your function, and your future role. So you can see how complex and distinct people's covenantal DNA can be. Each and every household represented in here, each and every individual, you have a very distinct and unduplicatable covenantal DNA. But then as a tribe, we have Kingdom Heirs has a covenantal DNA according to these things. Right? And none of those things take away from each other.
Yeah.
Okay? So those are the things that Moshe is, one, acknowledging. There's a dimension where Jacob spoke things over his sons, which are now being spoken to in the form of a tribe by Moshe. So you can see the multiplication, the expansion, the safeguarding of Torah over time. You can see it in effect, and Moshe is essentially passing the baton at this point, because he knows all of these things for each and every tribe, and he is speaking over them, and by his words, literally activating expansion. Like, he's enlarging who they are and empowering them through that to actually bring them to fulfillment.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing when we're safeguarding Torah and passing it to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to understand this is how blessing works. Mm-hmm. If you're going to give a father's blessing, it's not just like we talked about, it's not just making somebody feel good. You have to intimately know to actually have that type of relationship. I know who you are. I know your history. I know your character. I know the condition that you've been called to. I know your function and your future role, even if you don't know those things. And by me blessing you, I am pulling that out of you and activating it.
Yeah.
See how different... I mean, how different this is as a blessing, but how much more powerful. I'd rather have that as a blessing. I'd rather have somebody speak over me who knows things about what's already in me that I have no idea about.
Yes.
Pulls it out of me, makes me aware of it, empowers me to fulfill that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So blessings correspond to identity that's already embedded in your covenantal DNA. And it's the activation and the expansion of it. So when you think about that, and you think about this dichotomy of Torah establishing unity of a whole nation of very distinct callings, very distinct identities, very distinct functions, right? Nothing is the same about each of these tribes. So you have distinction and unity, all wrapped up in one, with no competition.
Yeah.
Right? And think about that as a dynamic that he's giving us, that we're stepping into, that we have to understand, that flies in the face of insecurity, and how shallow and deceptive and fake and simple when you think about it, when you understand this, how simple and easy it is to understand how we will fall into a trap of insecurity, trying to prove, trying to obtain, trying to satisfy something about our current situation. Like, this is so powerful. Last week was powerful enough to just break off that system and break out of that system. But then to understand this impartation, I feel like if you just meditate on these two chapters, you will never be insecure in your entire life.
Yeah.
How could we?
Mm-hmm.
If we truly understand what he's breaking off and then what the Father is establishing by sending Torah down like a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
So what happens is there's this ecosystem created of distinct functions that are developing and being fulfilled over time. We are all part of an ecosystem. Each of our households is part of an ecosystem. Kingdom Heirs is part of an ecosystem, right? While maintaining distinction for each level, right? The View House has its own distinction. Brian has his own distinction. You guys have your own distinction, right? But then the house has its own distinction from other households, right? But we're still unified. The way he designed it, the way he designed blessing is to reaffirm and enforce that there's no, it displaces the room that insecurity would have taken up.
Yeah.
So Torah establishes a collective identity while blessings identify complementary distinctions of each and every member. So distinctions created while maintaining unification.
Yeah.
Right? That is the exclamation point on Moshe's entire assignment, is what we're talking about right now. So how important is it that we understand blessings? Because that was him saying, I'm passing the baton and I need you to understand this.
Yeah.
Not only I need you to understand this, but I need you to apply this knowledge beyond revelation. I need you to be disciplined in it, which means you take the understanding, you apply it, you're disciplined in what it means to understand blessing, to bless and to be blessed. Mm-hmm. We're disciplined, and then that becomes the culture of how we live our life.
Yeah.
So our day-to-day, we're not processing our relationship with Yahweh according to a false understanding of what a blessing is. Think about the implications of this. When Yahweh is correcting you, right, in the false understanding of blessing, you might throw away the value in being corrected by one who loves you.
Yes.
Right? There's so many implications of just a failure to really understand what a blessing is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's something that gets tossed around so much, and we really don't understand it like it's being conveyed in here by Moshe. So here's another way to think about it. A blessing is divine favor spoken to amplify, empower, and bring fulfillment of who you are and your assignment. Again, think of, this reminds me of Matthew 25:21. It says, well done, my good and faithful servant. Right? It's who you are, my good and faithful servant, and fulfilling an assignment. Well done. Right? That statement of affirmation basically to me is evidence at the it's evidence at the end that goes to show that what we're talking about, blessing, that a spiritual father can implement blessing, the mechanism of blessing, to get you to the place to be told, well done, my good and faithful servant. Because what he's doing is actually taking something that's already in your DNA and he's empowering you to fulfill it because of who you are and what your assignment is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We always say that, right? Oh, I just want to hear, well done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we know, we say that. We know it all the time. But this is the actual anatomy of that. This is what's behind that.
Yeah.
This is why that statement was said.
Yeah.
Because blessings are a mechanism to get you to get you to safeguard who you are, your assignment, have somebody in the previous generation pull it out of you so that you can fulfill it for the next generation,
mm-hmm.
which is why somebody would say, well done, my good and faithful servant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is important to understand. And I'm almost done here because I feel like this is such a big thing for us to understand in combination with last week. But I want us to hear this, because I feel like if there's any residue of insecurity or trying to compare, this flies in the face of comparison. Unity, I've been saying unification, Torah unifies.
Mm-hmm.
Unity is not the same as uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good.
Comparison is trying to be uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I want what that person has.
Yes.
Which is going to create uniformity.
Yeah.
Uniformity is not the ideal here.
Mm-hmm.
Because uniformity doesn't leave room for distinction. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yahweh manifested himself and brought a collective uniformity under the banner of Torah, but that encourages distinction.
Yeah.
Moshe was encouraging
mm-hmm.
distinction, and the distinction wasn't based on, well, this is what I want.
Yeah.
This is what I want to be. This
yeah.
is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because I see somebody else doing it.
Yeah.
You can't even do that anymore. Because the distinction is based off of something that's already in your DNA.
Yeah. Yep.
How freeing is that?
Yes,
very.
My covenantal DNA already has embedded in it the fulfillment of whatever my purpose is, and somebody needs to come along and bless me and activate it and call it out and call it done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like to get to the level of revelation, discipline, culture. What are you breaking off your child's life?
Mm-hmm.
What are you breaking off your grandchildren's lives to just know this is the culture I was born into?
Yeah.
This is what I commonly understand blessing to be. Like they will never even experience
mm-hmm.
such a false, shallow understanding
yes.
of what a blessing is that ultimately just sets them up.
Right.
So the blessings then they're not only for the individual, really at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're not for the individuals who quote unquote receive them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a contribution to the community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just Yahweh's character, right? Not only does he safeguard you from comparison, insecurity, all of these things that we fall into the trap of, which is clear in chapter 32.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It is very clear, like our default is what we're going to fall into, is chapter 32. But then in 33, Yahweh manifests his character and provides the blueprint to say, not only did I tell you what was going to happen, not only did I warn you of what you're going to do, but now I'm going to, on top of that warning, I'm going to give you the blueprint on how to fill that space
uh-huh.
and displace all that stuff that leads you down that road.
Yeah.
So in that, like it doesn't, like you almost can't even say, when you say I received a blessing or I was blessed, now based on this definition, saying I was blessed means that somebody in the generation before me operated in a way as a spiritual mother or father because they knew what was in me even more so than I did.
Yes.
And so they spoke over
yes.
me to activate that.
Yes.
I received a blessing.
Yes.
But you can't necessarily say I received a blessing because somebody gave me a tip at work and it was $100.
Right.
You know, or whatever. I'm not saying that's not a blessing, but that's not what it's about. It's not a self-serving, that's not the purpose of a blessing. Is I got $100. Somebody told me something nice. Somebody encouraged me. I'm not saying they're not.
Yeah.
But that we've kind of limited it to that, and it plays into the comparison, the self-sufficiency, all that stuff, and it just makes a big mess. So not only do we have to understand what the blessing is, but we have to understand, and this just reaffirms, that it's a contribution for the community.
Mm-hmm.
Your distinction is to benefit the community.
Amen.
Which then also flies in the face of, well, I want what
yeah.
that person has.
Yeah.
Well, what that person has is built to benefit you. But if you're just like, benefit me,
yeah.
I want your blessing to benefit me, then you're just consuming and you're also
yeah.
not doing what you were supposed to
yeah.
do to benefit them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And it's not like a 50-50.
Yeah.
It's not like a, I'll let my gift benefit you, you let yours benefit
yes.
me. We shouldn't even be thinking like that.
No.
We should just be thinking, fulfill
yes.
my assignment.
Yes. Yes.
Moshe, and what he did in this Torah portion wasn't looking for anybody else to benefit him. His main concern was, I am going to fulfill this assignment, and I'm going to impart to the next generation a blessing that will get them to the end of their life to do exactly
yes.
what I'm doing
yes.
to pass the baton to their generation
yes.
after
yeah.
that.
Yes.
So it's almost like you don't receive a blessing as much as you become the blessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just think of it that way, man. Don't pursue blessings, become the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Contribute to your community, fulfill your assignment.
Amen.
Be who you were designed
Amen.
To be.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Expand.
Yep.
Be empowered. Fulfill your assignment. That is the purpose and the end objective of what a blessing is, according to this Torah portion.
Mm-hmm.
Which, keeping in mind the context, is a major generational transition turning point.
Mm-hmm.
It's two generations are hinging on these words.
Yeah.
And it's a reflection of what was done before him. Right? So you can see the magnitude of what's happening here. And I think this is so critical for us to understand every Torah portion.
Yeah.
And if we're looking at the Torah as the prized possession, an eternal thing that's been given to us as a manifestation of Yahweh himself, not rules, not regulations, but this thing that just safeguards us generation to generation to get us to the point of where he wants us in Revelation. It's just so critical for us to understand. And I feel like as we've stepped through all these transitions and these different paradigm shifts, I'm gaining more clarity as to my role has a lot to do with making sure that our family is apprehending these type of key concepts in the sequence that we need to understand them so that we can actually mobilize effectively based on these and keep moving in a cohesive manner to stay on the trajectory, because we're not void of counsel.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So going back to our literal transition after Tabernacles, what's going to happen is we are decentralizing, so to speak, and the burden of the spiritual burden of all of these dynamics, of these understandings, of the spiritual burden of the process of restoration, which is revelation, discipline, and culture, the burden of that is being placed on the heads of each individual house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we're shifting out of Mosaic, Aaronic style leadership where certain people, the minority of people, are being the buffer and carrying the burden and preventing the consequential nature of
mm-hmm.
of teaching to hit the people, right? It's resting on each and every individual, each and every household now. So thinking about that transition, you can see that that is exactly what Moshe is doing. He's putting it on each and every individual tribe. Right, he's decentralizing it by a factor of 11 tribes,
mm-hmm.
and that is it's encouraging, because we didn't we didn't know this when we felt led to do that, but Yahweh is leading us by saying, I need you to do this, take this action, and then this understanding comes later, right? That's how you raise your children. You wash your hands, they don't know why. They understand it later. You have them be obedient to certain actions that they will understand later. And Yahweh's consistently done that through the last 3 years. And so it's pretty powerful for us to understand these things and for us to, let me say it this way. The danger, I feel like we're at such a critical, like this transition could be everything. It's designed to be everything because we are looking to the ancient path, we're finding it, and we're walking it. Like that is what's happening. And it is such a tremendous and humbling place to get to and to be filled with gratitude for. But the danger in it is we can, if that burden is not taken on, is not owned by each and every individual, because that's the blueprint we have in Scripture, right? We're activating the culture aspect this next year. If that burden or that ownership is not carried, then what will happen? Sorry, this is taking. I'm trying to be careful about what I'm saying. If there's two key things that are tied together in Torah, Torah and land. We are being given land. We're crossing over into a place of dwelling, and the culture is the emphasis each and every household. Last week, we essentially saw is them being told, I'm going to give you the dwelling place, but if you forget or if you don't put yourself in alignment, you don't feel secure, you're not at his feet, you're not receiving and obeying. If you have the combination of the dwelling and the abundance he gives you, which I'm equating to what he's having us step into, if you're given that, but you don't align it with Torah, if land, dwelling, and abundance and Torah are not kept in proper balance and alignment, then what's going to happen is we will just essentially make another system.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Another system that's going to be harder to... It's going to be harder to pick up on and to deal with because it looks... We could have some households step in and be like, an attitude of like, I'll deal with that later, whatever. Or I'm not going to take this seriously, and we'll keep coming to service, we'll do the feast, we'll do the events, we'll do the blah, 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 this and that. But you can see how if you're taking advantage of the continued dwelling, but you're not secure, you're not postured correctly, you're not sitting at the feet of the Father, you're not hearing and obeying, and therefore keeping those things in alignment, it is a very subtle and dangerous way to create another system that when you look at it, it looks the same, but it is so subtle and way more dangerous because now we know better, but we're creating counterfeit. We're creating a counterfeit. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
We're taking advantage of where we're going, but we're not taking on, this is what Yahweh said I need to do for me as an individual, for me as a household. Because as we're crossing over, what's transpiring is the blessing, and I believe this is spiritually happening for us, that it's as if Moshe is blessing all of us to experience this dynamic of blessing. So as on the other side of this, when we step into what he asked us to step into, we are going to be awakened to part of our covenantal DNA that we weren't aware of, which will allow us to fulfill our purpose.
Yeah.
And it's going to collectively bless and advance the entire family to keep us on a trajectory, because we're not void of counsel, to safeguard Torah as a lived experience for the next generation.
Yes. Yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
So, embody that posture in verse 3. It's what Sean has been saying, you know, and it's even those type of things we can take for granted. I don't know how many weeks it's been, but just as an example, Sean has stood up here seeking the Father, meditating, praying on what does hosting look like, to align as best he can, as best as he understands the leading, to posture our family. And that posturing has embodied part of what Moshe is saying. This is how you need to posture yourself to reset for what you're stepping into. And it's like, there's so many things we could take for granted. And I'm not saying we're doing that, but I'm just, as an example, you know, we can go through the motions, and that's what's going to become dangerous, because going through the motions while we're being given this level of abundance is what's going to create these counterfeits that are going to be really hard to figure out. But the crazy thing is, the way that we're stepping in with this paradigm shift, it's like, if that's what people want to engage in, is the capacity to create a very slick looking counterfeit, nobody's going to stop. Nobody's going to stop anybody from doing that.
Yeah.
So I just want to, I mean, these are some heavy chapters last week and this week. So we need to be on point. We need to embrace the reset that's being given to us and evaluate where we're at in the process of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Have we stopped at knowledge? Right? Mm-hmm. We as leaders have tried to deal with that by being quicker, not going into so much depth, because it's like, we don't need to keep processing more and more knowledge, right? We need to continually appropriate all the things we've learned and build consistency and build discipline, so that as we get to this point in time, we are all ready to step into the place of, okay, now culture is going to begin being established.
Yeah.
Okay, and remember this when, you know, when we find out kind of what the new seat looks like for the mother of our house, because Yahweh is very specific about a lot of these dynamics that have to do with culture with her. And so this will give us a better understanding of what it is that she's carrying in the capacity that we'll learn about it. So, all right.
All righty. Tithes and offerings, we've gone over it several times, but just going back to Deuteronomy 26, it really stands out to me, and that's, then you are to set down, make sure I'm at the right part here, set down before Adonai your God and worship before Adonai your God. You will rejoice in all the good that Adonai your God has given to you and your house, let me see here, you and your Levite and the outsider in your midst. So I got copy and pasted the wrong one here, but coming before, bringing our tithes before God with a remembering, coming, approaching from remembering of who He is, and who He is in our lives and in our communities. And I think that combines well with today of this week's Torah portion as well. So the blessing, the prophetic blessing, is the past, the present, and the future. Mm-hmm. That's all combined into one.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding adding the context to understanding the blessings, what they mean, expansion, fulfillment of covenantal DNA,
mm-hmm.
The covenantal DNA, name, history, ancestor, character, calling, territory you occupy. So remembering our story,
mm-hmm.
past, present, and future,
mm-hmm.
in that context,
mm-hmm.
Bringing our tithes and offerings from that place of remembering that, and then also finding the joy and rejoicing and worshiping as we do that. And then also from this week's Torah portion, also highlighted in that remembering as well, indeed a lover of his
of peoples he is he. All his people are in his hand. They followed in your steps, each receiving your words. And then also another verse, happy are you, O Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by Adonai, the shield of your help and the sword of your triumph? Your enemies will cower before you, and you will trample on their backs. That's all part of the blessing that we read about this week and heard more in depth and had a greater context of understanding of what that means. So as you prepare your tithes to remember that, to remember the song last week, and then also the blessings and what we're rejoicing for this week.
Mm-hmm.